Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, John Cass, johncassnews.com. John.
We have a good columnist today.
We do?
Yeah.
Who's this we business?
Well, I have a good columnist today.
Yes.
Writing on the site, John Cass News. $50 a year, $5 a month, for the finest common sense in the Midwest.
Okay, is that a tease, or are you going to consummate that tease? Oh, there it is. I'm looking at johncassnews.com right now.
What do you see there?
I see a column from yours truly.
There you go.
All right. Yeah, that's a sort of an evergreen perspective I've had for some time, that this innocent bystander routine that we do. You know, we do it in Chicago, but it's sort of metastasized nationally, where nobody is responsible for the things they decry. Nobody is responsible for what's going on in their neighborhood, at their kid's school, in their city, in their state, in their country. It's easy to describe what's happening, and it's easy to point fingers at politicians, and a lot of that is perfectly legitimate, but then the sort of reflection of how did we get to this point, these criticisms that you lodge, from whence do they spring, that's where there's a bit of a disconnect, don't you think?
I think that people are responsible for their own local government, and they should stand up and be counted, and if they don't, well, then they get driven out. As so many people are, you see them crying to you, crying to others in the media. I didn't know the taxes were. I don't understand why did they raise our taxes? I can't afford my house. Well, you can't afford your house because they don't want you to, and they're just churning, and they need another table, and so you're in the way.
It's funny, I got an email from a listener yesterday saying, you know, sometimes the way you come across, meaning me, yeah, is like you're chastising listeners. You know, you should do more of a page out of Rush Limbaugh and you know, have fun and ridicule the Democrats and so on and so forth as both a means to education and activism, prompting people into activism. And so here's my response, that generally speaking, my response was, well, first of all, I'm not Rush Limbaugh, and I'm not trying to be, number one. Number two, things now are very different than they were during Rush Limbaugh's heyday. And number three, I'm all for ridiculing the devil. I say it all the time, and we do it all the time. But the idea that the job here and the proper consummation of this platform is to just ridicule the BLM Brandons and Jelly Bellies and Mr. 10% of the world. I mean, any trained monkey can do that.
Right.
Really. And there are a lot of trained monkeys in conservative media that do that. That's easy. So what's the next step after you bemoan and and lambaste people that we were all party to electing. What's the next step? Oh, well, you know, I don't want to think about the next step.
Well, let's just have a little fun. The problem is that the people that they're concerned about have already thought of the next step and the next one.
Well, that's another point. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Just because you're not thinking of the next step doesn't mean somebody else isn't. Yeah, that's a good point. So we haven't had you on over the last, almost 2 weeks now, week and a half.
I saw you in Naples before I've been on the show. Yeah.
Right. Yes, I know. But I don't want to leave your wisdom in Southwest Florida when it comes to this slow rolling count for the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. That speaking of Groundhog Day here, where we just have to be so committed. I mean, it would just be a travesty if somebody rigged an election against the Irish and Eileen Burke didn't win.
You know,
what are we going to do in Cook County? Cook County is so corrupt, John. Have you heard?
I made the fatal error of quoting one Johnny Rocco, Edward G. Robinson, who in Key Largo said, "You count the votes again and again till they add up right."
Right.
And this created quite a series of pearl-clutching episodes from some of my more liberal, I would call them Bolshevik, colleagues in
broadcast. You're attacking our democracy.
John Cass is full of his conspiracy. My God, how dare you bring it up? You know, calm down, Eric Zorn, you little yap dog.
Well, I mean, you understand that
they're upset. They're upset. I'm not the one who found the 10,000 votes, Dan.
Yeah, but election irregularities are the regularity in Cook County. So I can understand where they say, what are you talking about? There's nothing wrong. It's just we're just counting and we're just making sure we're double and triple checking. We're going to get to an answer. There's no evidence of any wrongdoing. There's no evidence of any chicanery. There's no evidence of fraud or improper ballots being improperly counted or ballots not being properly counted. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, yeah. What is this? You're an insurrectionist, for goodness sakes.
They're still counting. They haven't yet reached a final tally, have they?
They and will nope. do It is like Orson Welles on Paul Masson Wines. They will count no vote before it's time. And so just please a little patience to make sure every vote is counted and every voice is heard.
I don't want to be patient because I want the media in this corrupt state of Illinois, the one that I used to love and live in, call out the people responsible. Who's responsible? Who's having their big coming out party in August? The Democratic National Committee, J.B. Pritzker, host, with party favors galore. We're going to have a convention, and they can't even count the votes in Cook County.
Well, they can. They just they're slower counters. How about a little grace when it comes to people who don't count as fast as you? That's all.
Yeah.
Paul in Plainfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Dan, just a few minutes ago, you were making comments on how you need to be nicer, and I don't think that's true. You're the only one in the radio that will hold voters accountable for their stupidity, and I truly appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. It's going to be difficult. Like, you know, if people don't like my sometimes acerbic excesses, well.
You're kind of prickly. Let's put it that way.
Sometimes, yeah.
You know what they want? They want to be hugged.
I can't be a hail fellow well met all the time like John Cass. It's just not my nature.
There's enough space in these arms. For the whole world. I would hug the whole world.
I'm just not that guy. Yeah. Matt in Mount Greenwood.
Hey, good morning, Dan and John.
Hey.
John, great website, bud. You know, people can't take constructive criticism, and some of the best teachers are the ones that challenge you. You know, a little self-reflection and challenging by others like you, Dan, do to many people makes us better. You know, people get too comfortable in their own shoes, and they, like you said, they don't want to be held accountable. But some constructive criticism goes a long way. And as far as the Irish are concerned, being the descendant of three Irish grandparents, they came to this country for a reason, because it was so dysfunctional there, as my grandfather would say. And we are, you know, I don't know if it's genetic, but we're into self-destruction. And Danny boy, there's no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, you know, unless you steal it, like us good Irish Democrats in the city always did. Have a good day, guys.
Thanks for the call, Matt.
I think you should have a Great McGinty Film Fest. You ever see The Great McGinty?
I have, yeah.
One of the great movies, Preston Sturgis, yeah.
Well, for those of you who haven't, and since it's your reference, please explain the application here.
A stew bum gets picked up off the street. The short little tough guy. What was his name? Brian Dunleavy. And
ooh,
Brian Dunleavy
nice
is a short little tough guy, and he falls in with the Democratic machine and the Democratic Organization of Chicago and becomes a hero because he votes, what, 5, 10, 15 times more than the next guy. And that's how he begins to rise.
John in Libertyville.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say, Dan, about chastising voters, I think people definitely do need to be chastised in this state. It's going to hell in a handbasket. Sometimes, I'll be honest, though, it does not sit so well with me, considering you left Chicago. I think you should come back and join the fight a little harder.
Well, I hear you. Thanks for the call, John. I'm fighting from afar and sometimes from a near. I'm there quite a bit, but I get it. That opens up. I was thinking about this actually the other day. What John from Libertyville just said. Maybe we'll tackle that for a minute after the other side of the newscast. Quickly, Rob in Wheaton, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hello, Dan. Hello, John. How you guys doing? Greetings from Vienna. I'm here on spring break, and we're heading to Slovakia in a few minutes. But
very nice.
I had a comment about that comment about Rush. Remember that he always said, when it's time to panic, I'll let you know. And if we were alive today, I'm pretty sure he would have said, it's time to panic. And so I totally agree with Dan that this is a different world, even in the short 4 or 5 years that Rush has been gone. It's things aren't that funny anymore, frankly.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call, Rob. Enjoy your spring break. Craig, Mount Greenwood.
Oh, hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, John. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, hope you're up for just a little bit of constructive criticism there, Dan. Here's what I noticed. There's a couple of things, because you're a very cautious guy about getting in on things, like when people are coming up like something that might be a conspiracy theory or something like that. And so some of the callers out there, we've probably felt that you were a little late coming to the party on two things, the J6 stuff and the election fraud stuff, where callers that would call in, you'd be a little bit prickly when they would be a little bit all, you know, they were already like really onto that. And I'm going way back now. You were being cautious, I know, but I know, you know, some people, because I got friends that we listen to you, and he says, man, what the heck's wrong with that guy? He's not. I said, hey, he's just being overly cautious, that's all. But that's the thing.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call, Craig. That's a fair point.
It's good
all
to
right,
be
well,
cautious.
Sometimes. Look both ways. Measure twice.
Don't go in the meadow, Bambi. Don't go in the meadow.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender, Signature Bank.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, and a blessed Good Friday. It's a good Friday in another respect, too, a very secular one. We have John Cass here sitting in for us. Amy is off. John Cass, johncassnews.com. John is in. And John, yesterday, of course, this contrast that had social media abuzz with commentary. Biden grinding with Lizzo on one side of town, and President Trump, former President Trump, attending the funeral of slain NYPD officer Jonathan Diller on the other side of town. $25 million in hard cash that Biden was going to raise with Obama and Clinton in tow. Meanwhile, Trump was standing with those who protect and serve and saying this.
This is such a sad occasion. The only thing we can say is maybe something is going to be learned. We've got to toughen it up. We've got to strengthen it up. This should never be allowed. Things like this shouldn't take place, and to take place so often. So thank you all for being here. It's an honor, and it's an honor for me to be here. This is a great family, the Diller family. I met the friends, and I met every one of them inside, and these are just incredible people that are just devastated. They're devastated. They've got a tough road. It's going to be a very tough road. So thank you very much, everybody. Appreciate it.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line.
What were they upset about? What was the left upset about? That he went to see the police the slain police officer's family? Is that what they're upset?
I don't know that they commented on that. I mean, I think they just ignored commentary generally, certainly commentary with respect to comparison, because, again, one is hanging out with celebrities and former presidents to raise campaign cash, while the other is standing with the families in blue, if you will. And the other matter is, what does it say about the opinion of rank-and-file police in New York, and I would say just about everywhere else, that there was an open advisory? Dem politicians in New York City, don't show up to his funeral. Don't desecrate the memory of Jonathan Diller, because that's apparently what they believe. Any sort of presence from these defund the police Democrats would represent.
Well, Joe Biden is so old now. I can't believe he's
how
still alive.
Old is he?
He's alive, and somewhat. There's some blood still circulating in him. But throughout his career as a hack politician, serving the interests of corporate credit card companies, et cetera, in Delaware, would you ever believe that the ARC would travel or move so far? The Democrats were once the party of cops, the party of the working guy, the party of the little guy. And now they're the party of the anarchist.
Well, now they're disinvited.
Yeah.
312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline. Of course, unfortunately, they still, and this is maybe at the leadership level, they still fall prey to the same siren song that the electorate, sensible portions of the electorate, though they're small, in metropolitan areas do, which is to play the myopic politics of the city center, to throw your weight behind a Paul Vallis, to throw your weight behind an Eileen Burke, and to participate in the fraud, in my view, that one represents some sort of paradigm shift from the other, the competitor. That, you know, you're talking about the parameters of debate being about the width of an eye of a needle, but we're supposed to pretend this is, everybody needs to be all in for this hack and not that hack. Everybody needs to be in for the old machine hack and not the new machine hack. And, you know, the FOP, and we had this discussion the other week with John Cantanzaro at FOP, talking about Burke after she repudiated the FOP endorsement like an old machine hack would in these new identitarian times. So you're going to fall on your, you're going to run up a hill for these people? Why? For what purpose? Because you think it's going to be a little bit better? And then the default, because it's not our fault, which is, we were just talking about, it's not our fault that these are the choices, but it is. Not exclusively yours, FOP, not exclusively yours, any particular constituency, but collectively it is. I mean, just thinking about the Cook County State's Attorney's race, like the mayor's race, like the governor's race. I mean, this is the forever lament. This is the best we have. I mean, nobody's ever heard of Clayton Harris or Eileen Burke outside of the very insular world of Cook County politics, Cook County Dem politics, or if you've sat on the Cook County bench, maybe.
What's the difference between them? One's black and one's white. One's backed by Tony Preckwinkle and the other would be embraced by Tony Preckwinkle. What are we talking about? Just skin pigment? Immutable characteristics?
But so this is my point. This is my point. And so Eric Adams in New York City, speaking of Dem politicians, including a former NYPD officer who's now the mayor, being essentially told not to come. Like when they turned their backs on de Blasio. Oh, well, now we have one of our own. How's one of your own doing? How's one of your own doing when he is
worse? Because he knows what's going on. He knows he knows something of the streets, and he's just playing the game that the others are playing.
Well, right. So he inherited this defund the police culture,
right,
and paradigm. I mean, that was going on under, of course, that Sandinista, Bill de Blasio, which, by the way, was elected two times. And like Kim Fox here. And she said, well, he inherited it. There's only so much he can do. You know, he sheepishly sometimes ventures out just a little bit to say, you know, maybe the sanctuary city we have to provide for working with ICE when it comes to violent offenders. But then what is he doing furtherance of it? And to the extent he inherited this and you have to give him time and he's got, it's complicated. Okay, well, then give me some evidence to support the claim that he is attempting to change the order of the day. You just don't see it and you don't hear it because it's not happening. And so I say, like, this, the stakeholders and who and particularly police, because obviously they're front lines and they're literally in the crossfire of the chaos that has been engendered by these politicians, some of whom their very union supported. Well, maybe it's time to get a little bit more active on the front end when it comes to the candidate recruitment and development. It's the same thing with the FOP that I say about the GOP donor class and so many other stakeholders that could have influence, even sort of the combine-ish C-suite set in Chicago. Don't complain to me about this dismal choice between Burke and Harris or BLM Brandon and Vallis or pick a race, any race, when you're not doing any of the work on the front end, which you would otherwise do if it was with respect to a union contract, which you would otherwise do if it was with respect to your business.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
You know, we had this event in Southwest Florida that you were mentioning before, and the this is like 250 people. I mentioned this the other day. It's like 250 people. These are all Chicagoans. You know, they're all
love y'all. Thanks for showing up.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. It was incredible. And this is just one club down here right. in Naples. And you know, they all spent most of their life in Chicago. The kids, the schools. Some of them are very recent in terms of flipping their residency. And so they all are, you know, have standing to talk about a place they've invested so much and spent so much of their lives. It's not just me, by the way. They have standing, too, even if they don't vote there anymore. And then the question is, well, how do we lose you? And then the question is, well, is there any hope? Is there any reason to come back? And we started with the Cook County State's Attorney's race. And we started with the Bring Home Chicago referendum that failed. And I asked you the question, does Eileen Burke, if she ends up being victorious, does that signal any sort of, you know, even a dim flicker of hope?
And the answer
and the same thing. And the same thing with the referendum. And your answer was, you tell me. You tell us.
There's no hope. Chicago, Cook County, and Illinois have to bottom out before there's going to be change. As long as the fat boy governor, billion-dollar, billionaire governor, can buy the Democratic Party and promote his candidates without being questioned, they can't even count the votes. Where are the newspaper editorials like the New York, the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times? Where are the columnists for those newspapers grabbing them by the ear, putting Pritzker in his business, saying, hey, did you do this? Can you not count the votes? No one is saying a thing. I don't see any civic outrage of any kind. So if they're not going to be outraged at this joke of a state that can't count votes, at the joke of a county that lets repeat offenders brutalize, you know, in the main black women, because they're the ones who are the victims, I mean, how are the rest of us supposed to care about it?
Thanks. Ron Southside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan. Hey, John. And hey. Dan, I mentioned this to you a couple of weeks ago. I now have as much disdain for the Republican Party, probably even more than the Democrat Party. Because, see, therein lies the problem. I mean, where are you going to get enough trouble? The Republican Party in this state is trash. So I want to spend more time pointing out where the real problem. There are so many people, and I know them, that are looking for an alternative. So you're going to put up this perennial loser, Bob DeRosa, John? I want to hear that more also from you. They are both garbage. See, it makes it seem like Democrat Party and Pritzker. There is no Republican Party. And anybody associated with it, they are garbage. But I want to make a good point. I want to make a point real quick there. The strength of any team is depth. And I just want to say, you all have so many good people to fill in with John, the other John, Charles Thomas. I did have to say that great depth to a good team, but really, guys, the Republican Party, the way I feel now, I just don't even want to deal with them, man. That go the problem right there. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Ron. Tom in Deer Park.
Hey, good morning, John and Dan. I think you changed the subject. The initiation of your segment. You touched on the three rock stars that raised $25 million to a cheering crowd. It looked like a MAGA rally for progressives. And then you went on to talk about how President Trump showed up at the officer's funeral. But what was bouncing all over the internet yesterday, where was all that love and compassion for Officer Brian Sicknick, that died of a stroke the day after the insurrection? And John, think the last good column you wrote, or honest column you wrote, was after that insurrection. And now you've totally changed your tune to the Julie Kelly version of retconning of that day.
Yeah.
So, I'll hang up and listen.
Please, would you hang up, please? Don't ever call me again. I don't ever want to talk to you again, man. You want to play that game? You sound like Eric Zorn. You want to play a game with me that you're questioning my integrity? I got two words for you, and the second one is off.
I'm sorry.
Did you want something more?
No.
Melodramatic.
No. That's fine. I think that's perfectly acceptable and succinct. The Brian Sicknick. It's funny. Yeah, right. He died of a stroke. Jonathan Diller was killed in line of duty. The two are indicative of different things. But what you'll recall, well, you won't recall, Tom, because you're, Mr. Insurrection. You're Liz Cheney in drag is what you are, Tom in Deer Park. You're pathetic. And you're the one with no integrity, as you demonstrate every time you call and with every little pronouncement you make on social media, pretending like you're some watchdog. You're pathetic. And you cast yourself as a libertarian, like so many of these never-Trumper nitwits. We all expressed sadness for Brian Sicknick. And by the way, there was a wake, essentially, in the Capitol Rotunda. So I think it got quite a bit of attention. Very sad about his death, like anybody's death, like any officer's death. We never criticized Brian Sicknick. We criticized the false characterization that he was killed on January 6th by people protesting rather than died of natural causes, a stroke. So, Dr. Tom, you'll want to take judicial notice of the official autopsy in that case.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. An AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning, John Cass, johncassnews.com. John, that line you offered at the end of last hour in response to phony libertarian Tom from Deer Park asking about Brian Sicknick and comparing him to Jonathan Diller, the officer that was killed in the line of duty in New York City. And just for the purposes of resuscitating the January 6th and lodging his Kinzinger-like claims about January 6th that are completely at odds with the fact, as these never-Trumpers who call themselves conservatives and yet support, I mean, he was cheerleading the fundraiser that Biden had with Clinton and Obama, but yeah, right. He's a real man of free minds and free markets. He's a total fraud is what he is. But that line,
the line, I
had a stroke and I didn't blame the liberals. You said, you know, where Tom is trying to blame conservatives or anybody who showed up on January 6th.
Although I did have for good Brian cause. Sicknick. I mean, I had good cause. They aggravated the hell out of me for so long. But
I didn't
blame them.
I think I had a stroke and I didn't blame the left.
Right.
That should be a T-shirt, and it should be available at johncastnews.com.
I'm going to take you up on that. I'm going to. I hope that my lawyer's listening in, because I have him on retainer to listen to everything I say, and I will instruct him to. Begin.
Right. Start get that copyrighted. It could be your three-peat.
The last thing I need is for some genius like from my old newspaper to try to steal that one from me.
Right. Mike Scott was mentioning opening day, and I know
White Sox suck. Yeah.
I have an idea, though. Oh, but by the way, just how bad is it? I saw this. The Sox yesterday, opening day, very sparsely attended for an opening day. And I understand from somebody, a friend who was there, that the corporate boxes were pretty empty, too. But hey, Reinsdorf wants $1 billion of other people's money. Sure. But also this, the Sox became the second team in baseball history yesterday to have zero runs, zero walks, zero extra base hits, and more than 10 strikeouts on opening day. The only other time it happened was the Giants on opening day in 1967 when they faced Bob Gibson. So the Giants faced the Cardinals and Bob Gibson. The Sox were facing Detroit and Tarik Skubal yesterday. So it's even worse than what happened to the Giants back in 67.
But how many runs did they get, the other team? They got...
They got one.
Yeah.
The Tigers? Yeah.
I mean, the kid that pitched was... I can't even name the starting five. Can you?
The starting five?
The starters.
What do you have...
What am I talking about? Yeah.
Well,
the
a
starting
soccer fan,
pitching.
Your confusion is understandable.
Five-man
Which do you have less hope in, Cook County, Illinois, generally, or the White Sox?
I think they're both on the same course to glory.
Yes,
right.
A long and winding one. I got an idea though for the new stadium, since I'm sure BLM Brandon wants to spend $1 billion. The Marxists will spend $1 billion so they can keep their hooks into Jerry Reinsdorf. Yeah, right. Why don't we do a multi-purpose stadium for the Sox and the Fire, and they can literally play at the same time since neither team scores?
I'm not going to...
Times to scale.
I'm not going to... I didn't take that crap from Tom from Deer Park, and I'm not going to take it from you. The beloved Chicago Fire, the men in red...
Men? Those aren't men.
Yes, they are.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to see you run up and down that field.
Well,
after 3 minutes, you'd be like, you'd be
now,
spitting out, you know.
After 1 minute, I'd be like, what is the point of all this? What are we doing?
Let's tell the listeners the truth of what's happening between you and me. We're going fishing in a few weeks. We're going up to a river up north
Yes. That
Dan has promised not to name. And I'm wondering, Dan, do you know that the rest of us who are going up, do you feel safe with us, like in the boat in the cold river?
What? Do I feel safe with a bunch of soccer fans? What's the fear there?
As you get prickly, there's one thing, you started the show with talk about your concerns that maybe you're a little bit too prickly.
No, I'm not concerned about it. Other people were.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Enjoy the trip then.
Okay. All right. Soccer hooliganism on the river. Is that what I'm in for? That's
yeah.
Fine.
An old man with a cane is a threat. Yeah. Come on, Mike Cranky.
you're still cagey. I'm sure you've still got a move or two. All right, so I wanted to get to some latest and greatest on our new Biden buddies that are entering en masse, and apparently more coming. That bum rushing of border security in El Paso, and sort of the redoubling of security there to quell the surge. Well, you're going to need more men. It looks like, because a 2,000-person migrant caravan is making its way to the border expected to reach El Paso in the next few days. In one clip, you can hear one of the leaders of this caravan, 2,000 people strong, encouraging the group with a chant, a la frontera, meaning to the border. Mm-hmm. And they proclaiming, we are not criminals, we are international workers. Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad you're not criminals.
I'm glad you're a bunch of communists. Get out, turn around, go home.
Well, no, I mean, we are not criminals, we're international workers. Well, thank you for the concession. I will take you at face value that you are international workers. And you just announced that you're coming here for economic reasons, and that is not a legitimate asylum claim. So you can't get in.
This will, you're going to cause a lot of great consternation in NBC newsrooms. They have to be aligned. You know, they all have to be aligned now. And you're throwing stuff out there that'll offer them misalignment, and that's bad.
Illinois, getting into the act too, you know, we're a border state now, so we want to facilitate the importation of people from around the world, these international workers, as they self-describe. A state senator named Ram Vilavalam has sponsored legislation. Here we go again. Boy, I need to add to the list of these wondrous legislative measures that have been introduced this session. It's really, really quite quite an expansive area, expansive list of policy areas that they're covering, all with ever bigger and greater gambits into
gender-affirming care.
Yeah. Well, among other things, generally speaking, you know, Marxism and the disintegration of Western civilization. That's the program. So Senator Vilavalam has a proposal to pay Illinoisans $1,000 a month, regardless of immigration status. Universal basic income, $1,000 a month, regardless of immigration status. The $1,000 cash payments would be paid to people who provide care for a child or other specified defendant, recently gave birth or adopted a child, enrolled or have enrolled in an educational or vocational program. So basically everybody in Illinois. So $1,000 a month, every household in Illinois at least, $1,000 a month for, let's say, 13 million, maybe cut it by a third. Yep, that's going to be real money. But, hey, don't worry, Jerry. We still got your $1 billion for the stadium. Don't worry, McCaskey family. We still got your $2 billion for your stadium. Don't worry. We still got health care for any illegal migrants that are shipped up here from Texas, and rent assistance, and I assume soon we'll follow suit with debit cards, I'm sure, a la New York City. We've got, there's just, you know, this is the land of milk and honey in Illinois. There is always more money. There's always another home to liquidate, isn't there?
But isn't there going to be another person, like listener, somebody on the news, turning to a reporter saying, but how did our taxes, what I can't afford my house, what happened?
New York Governor Kathy Hochul, just to give you sort of a order of magnitude and a direction of where this is going, she is, in her budget, has proposed $2.4 billion of spend into migrant care and state-funded housing construction, which is, by the way, the same thing that BLM Brandon is doing with respect to setting up more of that gimme-dad housing at taxpayer expense, because there's nobody. I mean, one thing we know, the city and the CHA, they know how to develop and run residential housing projects.
Yeah, because they're so successful at it.
Exactly.
You know, throughout. Yeah. That's why they developed Chatham. They turned Chatham. They dumped all the people out of CHA into Chatham, and a great middle-class black community is destroyed now. Thank you. Thanks, Rich Daley. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bill Malusian in Boston with ICE agents. We spent the morning with Boston-based ICE deportation officers as they arrested four illegal aliens charged with child rape and a combative MS-13 gang member. Is there any other kind? ICE says they were all released by local jurisdictions and ICE detainer requests weren't honored due to sanctuary policy. Child rapists.
Okay.
So there apparently some of those people here illegally are not international workers. Interestingly,
you've talked about holding the right people accountable. Well, you know who the right people to be accountable are for all this? Anyone who voted Democrat in the last 5 years, 8 years. If you vote Democrat, you're my enemy now. And I don't want to be a Republican. And I saw what the Republicans did in the Middle East. They broke it. And they ran around George Bush and Raytheon and the blue finger in the air and all that nonsense. But if you vote Democrat, you voted for Biden, you voted for Pritzker, you voted for Kim Fox and any George Soros prosecutor, how am I supposed to accept anything you say? I mean, if the ideal thing is that we treat each other like we're all members of one community, a small community. So how, if you're my neighbor and you voted for that, how am I supposed to accept you? How am I supposed to treat you kindly? I know this is Holy Week for many Western Christians, and all Western Christians, and we're coming on to Easter, and we should be somewhat kinder. But how am I supposed to be kind to people who vote this way to destroy neighborhoods and communities? How am I supposed to accept that?
Yeah, I mean, of course agree with that. I mean, these people are voting for their own destruction and the destruction of Western civilization in the process. So it's hard to have good feelings for right. them. But you know, but I also think that we need to spend a lot more time like rallying the people who play by the rules, you know, in this country. I mean, that's actually the truest rainbow coalition in America. That's the coalition that transcends race and country of origin and religion and all the other identitarian nonsense that the left wants us to get hung up on. These are the people who have lived lives in keeping with the traditions of Western civilization. These are the people who have paid their way, have worked, have saved, have colored inside the lines. And I think the Republican Party would be well served by issuing the clarion call, issuing a clarion call of that nature and in their direction. Because I think that's if you want to talk about sort of a unity play or coalition building, I think it's those who've lived those sorts of lives and who are raising their kids to live those sorts of lives. That's the real divide in a, you know, in a positive way. This is the real, like, you know, you want to organize a posse. Well, this should be our posse, what I'm describing.
I'm all for it. Sign me up.
Tony Roselle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. It's an honor to talk to you, John, and Dan, I talk to you a lot. I want to harken back
to
the mission trip.
It's not an honor to talk to me.
It's always an honor to talk to you, but I haven't talked to John before on the radio. If you're going to intimate threats about a boat full of soccer fans, Dan, all you have to do is touch them lightly on the shoulder, and they'll flop around the boat like a landed fish.
Yeah, I'm bringing my yellow cards. Is that the right term? I don't even know. You hurt John's feelings, Tony. It was an honor to talk to John Cass, and then you summarily insulted him.
When I heard that, I just shut you off because it's like I hear the nattering of Eric Zorn or some jerk
is,
like that.
It
just
is
turned
so
you
true.
Off, man.
I mean that the soccer flop makes Dennis Rodman look. Like on the up and up when he played defense and used to, you know, flop for those charges, you know, throw himself back 10 feet. But, I mean, that's nothing compared to the soccer flops. Exactly. Oh, gosh.
Because the basketball players are so tough. They all think they're Draymond Green or whatever his name is. Yeah, right.
We are in the process right now. We are the best time of year honoring Dr. James Naismith and the greatness that he brought to this world in the form of the game of basketball.
I really don't like that sport. I'm sorry. I like, you know, what I like, women's basketball, college basketball.
I'm talking about college basketball. I'm not talking about the pros. What's March Madness? It's college basketball. That's what
really?
I'm talking about. Well, you said I like college basketball. That's
Image,
what I'm talking about.
What is it? What's the term? Image?
NIL?
Like, yeah. Come on.
Well,
it's
that's
like
college
DEI.
Sports.
It killed colleges. Same thing.
I agree, but at least, I mean, why are we
have
even talking?
Have your fiction, have your little fantasy, go ahead.
What whaling village from across the globe invented soccer, honestly?
The English. I mean, it's the English game.
Yeah.
I recommend a great documentary, The English Game, on Netflix, Michelle Obama's station. Yeah.
And I de-recommend it, just on principle. Robert in Bloomingdale.
Hey, guys, how you doing today?
Hey.
So the reason I was calling is, you know, you were talking earlier about $1,000 for illegal immigrants. I mean, ka-ching, ka-ching here. Come on, when is this going to stop? You come to this country how it should be, which it isn't. You learn English. You be prepared to be a good American and do it legally, like President Trump says. That's the way I look at all this. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Robert. Greg in LaGrange.
Hey, how do you vote this? This election? You take a look at what President Trump did yesterday and what President Biden did. One was begging for money. The other one was at a funeral for an officer that was doing his duty to defend this country. Dan, I totally agree with you 100%. I listen to your counterculture. I agree with you 100%. That's what it's going to come down to. You don't have to go after people that don't look our way. You just look at their survival, and that's what it's going to come down to. And there is no Benedict effect for us. Remember that. No Benedict effect. They will come for us. They will come for us. They've shown that. They will continue. So that's the alternative. You either vote your way out of this, or you end up just being rolled over, because they will not stop. Illinois in 10 years is going to be a wasteland.
It's already a wasteland.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Dan and John Cass in for Amy J., Chicago's Morning Answer.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, sports gambling. So 6 years ago, the Supreme Court green-lighted it. The case was Murphy v. NCAA, for those of you scoring at home. And now we have commercials wall-to-wall, particularly in this time of March Madness, commercials wall-to-wall, but NFL games on Sundays too, ESPN, any sports-related programming. Jamie Foxx pitching one online betting portal, and what's that the black comedian actor's name? Kevin.
The little guy.
The little guy. Yeah. I'm blanking on his last name. Anyway, he's got one. LeBron James is a brand ambassador for DraftKings now, and on and on and on. You know, they're everywhere, and everybody's doing it.
I'm Greek. I don't bet on sports.
You don't bet on sports?
No, I'd like to bet on something clean, like boxing, for example.
Yeah, sure, right. Something you can really have confidence in.
But the sewer that is college basketball, the professional game, don't see it. College basketball, college football. What about Ohtani? You know, your producers just mocked him, saying Pete Rose is just an interpreter away from
That's been making the rounds on social media, because of course Ohtani, who's the LA Dodgers standout, who signed a 10-year, $700 million deal.
And I'm Greek, and I don't gamble. It's like the Irishman who doesn't drink or the Chinese guy who doesn't gamble. Same thing. I know what it does. And
years he who gambles ago, lives in shambles. Is that your
years
motto?
Ago? There's a guy in Chicago that was driving Paul Rica around. Paul Rica was the boss, undisputed boss of organized crime. And this driver was complaining about another mobster in Chinatown. He wanted to take them out. He was upset. And he's like, I just want to get rid of this guy. And Rica says, pull the car over. Pull the car over. How could you say that about him? Rica said, and this, the driver thought he was going to be iced. How could you say, it's terrible you say that about him. You want to kill him because you disagree? Don't want to kill him. Just hope that he becomes a gambler. Pray that he becomes a gambler. It'll take longer.
Yeah, okay. Well,
Thank
I mean,
you.
All right. Puts not too fine a point on it. But so the question is, though, the sanctioning of it, essentially by the high court initially, but now state governments and these sports stations, it's wall to wall. What was sort of, you know, you'd have to go back in the day on NFL game day, you know, you have a handicapper that comes on, you know, I mean, go way back, Jimmy the Greek or Hammer and Hank Greenberg or whatever.
The Greeks again.
I'm just saying,
no,
you know,
I mean, there would be somebody.
You know, everybody has their picks and this and that, but you wouldn't always have spreads that you would just talk about, here's who I think is going to win. And that's sort of what they do.
Goldberg's
on these pre-game
writing with Nick Lococo between games,
Well, that's sort of what they do with the pregame shows with Marsh Madness, but it's so much more open and notorious, and there's so much more promotion through advertising by all of these various online platforms. And the question is, does this end up, maybe perhaps along with NIL, when you're talking about the college ranks, ultimately destroying sports because of the corruption that insinuates itself? In point of fact, Charlie Baker, the former governor of Massachusetts, now the president of the NCAA, is asking state legislators to ban prop bets on individual players.
To ban what?
Proposition bets. So, for example, I say Terrence Shannon last night, the over-under was, let's say, the over-under for him, on his the amount of points he would score was 23 in the Illini game.
Right.
So, you know, it's minus 110 over, probably minus 120 over 23 and plus 105 under 23. You can bet on him as an individual player what he'll do, how many three-pointers another player will make, and so on and so forth. Well, Charlie Baker wants to eliminate that because the argument is, well, it just allows for really zeroing in on players, particularly on college campuses. My friend, you know, I just lost $500, say Terrence Shannon, and I'm just using him as an example. I'm not accusing him of anything. Can you, you know, miss a couple of free throws at the right time? I mean, the kind of stuff, look, we've had, you know, sports gambling corruption for a long time. Obviously, the Black Sox, for example.
Who doesn't think it's going to happen?
Well,
it's
happening
now.
No, of course it's happening. The question is not is it happening? Has it always happened? Of course it's always happened. The question now is, because of the push and the glamorization, are you going to have this really undermine the integrity of the sport? Because let me tell you something. These guys could be destroying their own enterprise. The only reason that I'm talking about the leagues now, I mean, so much of the revenue that's generated by the NFL, the NBA, college is based on gambling. Gamblers watching these games and the action on it and fantasy leagues, which is a form of gambling often.
Right.
But if you start to believe that the NCAA or the NBA or the NFL is rigged, the outcomes are rigged, that this is all WWE stuff, then you're not going to bet it and you're not going to watch it. So, I mean, there's multiple issues here. One is what you were talking about, he who gambles on the individual level and promoting more people to, you know, enter the gambling world, and some small percentage will become addicts and do and negatively impact their lives. And then the actual, quote, integrity of the league, are you going to ultimately undermine professional and semi-professional, which is college sports? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
You remember, remember the FBI had a crew that would watch over NFL players to see if they were gambling, to make sure that they wouldn't gamble.
Oh, there's a lot of that. That still goes on. I mean, this is how these guys get picked off. This has happened. I mean, it doesn't get perhaps the notoriety, but there's a Toronto Raptors forward as the subject of a league investigation of alleged suspicious betting. He was, at least, Jontay Porter.
Right.
There have been suspensions of players at Iowa and Iowa State, and actually a criminal prosecution, I think, in one case, for gambling on sports. But, I mean, look, 20 years ago, there's a point-shaving scandal at Northwestern. And there's been a point-shaving scandal at Boston College and at Tulane with John Hot Rod Williams. And so,
sure,
I mean, it's
I got it.
You know,
I don't want to bet on something that's crooked. The thing I want to
Well, that's the question.
What I want to bet on, what I want to bet on can't be fixed. Will I land that fish? Will you land that fish, that steelhead, that
we can bet on
steelhead?
It. We can bet on that.
You can bet on whatever you want, but I mean, sport to me is used to be about teams. Now it's just about, you know, I don't know, being alone on the water fishing.
Well, I mean, part of the you know, part of what's happening.
Kind of like a Walker Percy golf thing, yeah.
Well, part of what's happening, of course, at the collegiate level is, I mean, you hear it if you're watching any of these basketball games is, you know, this player, he spent his first 2 years at Rutgers, then he was at Oregon, then he was at Stanford, and now he's in his fifth year at Clemson, right? Right? So it's free agency now. And you, with the transfer portals and the ability to move around, and then the NIL money that's sloshing around, and that's only going to be an arms race, and then layer in the gambling piece of it, and of course you have the states that say, oh my gosh, don't gamble, it's so bad, except buy lotto tickets and gamble on sports because we're getting a cut of the action, and we've already spent the money that we budgeted that we would receive from this, so of course they're going to platform. And by the way, I say this. Look, I downloaded the Hard Rock gambling app. I mean, I'm not going to be a hypocrite on this. I bet college basketball. That's what I bet. I like to bet college basketball, and that's what I do. So in a couple of weeks, I'm done when March Madness is over. But I like to do it, and so I do. And it's legal in Florida, and you download the Hard Rock Casino app in Hollywood, Florida, and you can just bet online. It's that simple. But, you know, there's the obvious stories of players getting pressured or players not even knowing where the lines are, and they're betting on sports, maybe not their sport or their team, but other sports, and all of these cross currents. And it's just a question of, does this ultimately lay the seeds for the destruction of sport if this is something that you care about? And apparently, it's something that most Americans do care about because we see how much money is generated from sports.
I'm not betting on it. I don't care about it. I used to care.
Yeah, but you're not betting a fine. That's not the question. The question is legislative regulation. The question is should the state legislators intervene and stop and eliminate prop bets because Charlie Baker said so? Should we not platform sports betting? You don't have to allow sports betting in your state. You're just allowed to do it in the Supreme Court decision. It's not a mandate. I mean, for example, right. Look, I'll give you another just as a comparison, because these are arguably vices, right? I mean, you could call them your bread and circuses, sanitize it however you want, but let's call it what it is. It's a vice.
Right.
I'm willing to embrace my vices. Glenn Youngkin, the governor of Virginia.
Big college basketball better?
No, he just issued this message on why he vetoed legislation that would have created retail marketplaces for legalized marijuana in Virginia. Take a listen.
Today, I have vetoed the bill to create a commercial retail market for cannabis. Cannabis is bad for Virginia. And in all the other states that have had an extensive retail market, what you see is, first, it's terrible for children and adolescents' health and safety. Massive increases in child poisonings, massive increases in adolescent usage. And of course, when you combine that with the fact that the potency of cannabis today is dangerous, it drives mental health challenges and mental health sickness to the point of psychosis. There's also been a systematic increase in these states in violent crime. Of course, the black market doesn't go away. I mean, in California, the legal retail market only accounts for 10% of the entire cannabis market. And therefore, gang activity escalates and violent crime increases. And that's on top of the fact that you see traffic accidents and fatalities increase over 70% in marijuana-related accidents. And then finally, you couple this with the reality that the overall costs through the system in order to address the social requirements of this retail market far outweigh the tax receipts. And in fact, a study in Colorado found that Colorado spends $4.50 for every $1 that it brings in tax receipts. And so the entire argument that this could possibly be good falls down on every front. Cannabis is bad for Virginia. The law enforcement community does not want it. Healthcare workers do not want it. And let me tell you, parents do not want it in their children's lives.
So, you know, it's one of those things where, I mean, it's a question of what do you want to sanction and promote? And of course, how it's sanctioned and promoted, which is that it's some sort of unalloyed good. That's the way marijuana is promoted. It's medicine. Gambling is promoted as just a, you know, just a pastime. It's a, there's some more downsides than that. But what we but, you know, the promotion side, the advocacy side can't be honest about the costs and benefits. Thus the need for a discussion on the merits. Vince and Huntley, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Stop watching professional sports. They're anti-American since 2020.
Okay, Vince. I mean, yeah.
Because of the kneeling? What?
Well, the kneeling, the Black Lives Matter, All that, you know, all that nonsense. Yeah.
I got it.
So, who do you like tonight, Marquette? I just
want to see when is Pritzker going to do a commercial promoting potheads in Illinois? Like, you know, maybe you go to public school, you can't read, you can't write, but we've got pot, you know? When is he going to do something like that?
Yeah, you know, something, you know, again, it's just this confusion I think some people have. Like, if something is legal, it's necessarily a good. If something is illegal, it's necessarily a bad. Or, it's, you know, that prohibition or allowance is endorsement or opposition. And it's just more complicated than that. And I think the sports gambling thing, that's why I think the sports gambling thing is sort of interesting. Dan and John Cass in for Amy J, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy is John Cass, johncassnews.com. Get his columns, the Windy City podcast, and contributors as well.
The Chicago Way,
Way podcast. What am I talking about? I was doing this to Jeannie Ives yesterday, too. I was changing the name of her show on Sunday nights. Kept saying the right story instead of the real story. Now I'm changing the name of your podcast. I don't know what's happening to me. Falling apart.
You want to be an auteur.
Yes, precisely. All right, so John, Darth Sidious, that would be Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, was on with the obnoxious and insufferable Jim Cramer the other day on that one of those Investotainment shows on CNBC. Right. And Fink had this to say about his Bitcoin ETF and giving an indication of his confidence in Bitcoin and crypto as an asset class. Take a listen.
I'm very bullish on the long-term viability of Bitcoin.
I was going to say, did that surprise you?
That surprised me how much that's
really
gone up. I mean, look, it is. We're creating now a market that has more liquidity, more transparency, and I'm pleasantly surprised, and I would never have predicted it before we filed it, that we were going to see this type of retail demand.
So you thought you'd do good, yeah, but not this good.
I thought, yes. Yes.
Well, iBit is your ETF,
yes,
over at iShares.
Yes.
It's about to overtake Grayscale, which was in the business certainly a lot longer. You look at the gains since January 11th when it first came about.
Yes.
Have you ever seen this much inflow this quickly into
IBIT is the fastest growing ETF in the history of ETFs.
So what does that mean about where you should put your money? Should I put all my money into Larry Fink's Bitcoin ETF, or should I put it on UConn to win a second championship in a row? I'm debating.
Grayscale, I thought, was the skin disease, deadly skin disease in Game of Thrones.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I want to invest in something that I don't know what you're doing, and you and someone else can say how much it's worth, and I'll give you my money. Yeah.
Okay. And you sound like a skeptic, like our next
just
guest, Scott the Cow Guy Shelley, market specialist for Market Day Report, which is 10:30 to 1, and the Cow Guy Close from 1 to 1:30, both that's Chicago time, and both are at RFD TV. Scott, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Happy Good Friday.
Same to you. So what say you to what said Larry Fink?
You know, I don't have any Bitcoin myself. I've never put a customer in Bitcoin while I was broker for 35 years. It's almost like it reminds me, I'm Dutch, right? How about the tulip markets 500 years ago?
Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's this insatiable appetite for and fear of missing out. The first question I would ask anybody is, what does Bitcoin do? I mean, that's my problem. Nobody really has it. I mean, I have an idea what it does, but we've got a lot of investors that are doing something. I think John just kind of alluded to that they have no idea why they're buying it. And I think that I'm not massively a fan of Warren Buffett, but I think he put it best when, you know, if your only investment strategy is to buy it because you think the guy standing in line behind you is going to pay more than you did, that's not an investment strategy.
Let me posit another reason to buy it, though. Not Bitcoin or particularly Fink's ETF, is because you can't fight City Hall. And between State Street and Vanguard and BlackRock, you know, they basically control the Western world. And so if Larry Fink says it and that's the direction he's going to take everybody, then you can't fight City Hall. And you should probably do it even if you don't understand it. What do you say to that?
Two words for you, irrational exuberance. I mean, that's still not an investment strategy. And number two is that it's so volatile, it's not for the average investor. I mean, 2 years ago, it had a high of 68,000 and went down to 16,000. Now we've rallied all the way back up to 78,000 and it's all of a sudden it's good again. Well, there's a lot of people that just had a break-even party when we went up through 68,000 and they had to suffer, you know, for about a year, year and a half. There are some interesting things to it. I mean, part of it was sold to me that it was going to be out from underneath the government purview, but because the government's so broke, now that's not going to be the case. They're taxing it already. And a lot of the things, by the way, that Venmo and Zelle does, as those things, you know, more satisfy a lot of what people are worried about. I know it's a store of wealth outside of the dollar, outside of gold.
Right.
But at the same time, it's not really a store because it's so volatile. I don't know why. I just wouldn't put anybody in it because it's just not for everybody. It's actually not for a lot of people.
Speaking of crypto, Sam Bankman-Fried, SBF, favorite mega donor to the Democrat Socialists when he had money, when he had megas to donate. He got a 25-year sentence yesterday. Was that too lenient, too draconian, just about right? What's your view on the Bankman-Fried demise?
I was surprised. I thought it was lenient. I did. I mean, look, there's a lot of people that, you know, lost a lot of money with what he did. I mean, it was, you know, here, does that ever feel like end of days to you? Like,
That's crazy
what he just did, right? Yeah, that's crazy what he just did. Bitcoin is crazy. The stock market yielding 10% in the first 3 months of this year is crazy. There are so many things out there, and that's a great example of it, that tell me to go back down to my hole and wait till this thing is over, because right now we're out of our minds. There's hardly any rationale out there except for maybe putting your money away for a year in a U.S. Treasury at 5%. That's the only thing that I like right now, because this thing is a house of cards, and I don't want to be Chicken Little telling you that the sky is going to fall. I will tell you this, for 36 years of being in this business, I have never seen so many warning signs, so much corruption, so much deviance, that I'm afraid what's coming around the corner, because this is all on smoke and mirrors. And all these things that we're making these decisions on, like, whatever, Sam Bankman-Fried, you know, he has to pay $11 billion and he goes away for 25 years. But he ruined people's lives.
Yeah.
And he did it blatantly. But he was exalted as this new person that was going to come save, you know, society. And he is just the weird kid at the back of the room in your class when you were in fourth grade eating paste and sticking crayons up his nose.
Well, take it easy. I was that kid. And I don't, you know, hey, it's still very sensitive. So with respect to Sam Bankman-Fried and this whole sort of everything is a house of cards, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but why can't the market be up 10% in the first 3 months of the year? Because we're on the cusp of this this new technological revolution with artificial intelligence, and that's what's driving innovation, and it's going to result in untold wealth creation. So why can't we see this as legitimate, and why shouldn't we be optimistic?
Because every solid society since the beginning of this planet, you have to have a solid middle class, okay? And if you take the generally held belief that 15% of Americans own 85% of the stocks, that's a general number, say it could be 20-80, but 15, 85, whatever, it's in that area. If you go to those folks that own stocks and they own real estate, I don't care what age they are, this is the best market they've ever seen in their entire lives. But you look at the bottom 80, bottom 70% of this economy, those folks, mom and pop, Main Street, they're probably living paycheck to paycheck. They might not even own their home. They're renting. They don't have a huge 401k if they have one at all. There's never been a worse market for them. They've seen inflation go up 34% in the food they buy every day. They've seen inflation go up 33% in their energy that they touch every week. They're losing money on a daily basis because of what's been happening with all of these government spending programs and inflation. We're losing the middle class because they just can't keep up, but nobody cares because the upper 10, 15, 20% are the ones that are running the television stations telling you how great the stock market's doing. And if you go out to Main Street, just take a car, go drive out, you know, an hour outside of Chicago, there are people that are not, they don't know what to do. They've gone from spending their pandemic savings to maxing out their credit card debt, science, we've never seen it. Then they've gone to home equity lines of credit, but then that got up to 8%, and they couldn't afford that anymore. Then we've got record redemptions on emergency loans out of 401ks that we've never seen before. And now we've got this new thing called buy now, pay later, which is why we had any Christmas numbers as far as retail sales. The consumer is 70% of this economy, and he's about to roll over and be dead. And I tell you, mate, look, fine, join the stock market, let's have a party, but it feels like I've been doing it for a long time. I've seen this before. Everything is too good. Name me an asset class that's not doing well. That's what should scare you.
I wanted to talk about something, something else that's a bit frightening, and what you're seeing around Western Europe mainly hasn't quite come to the United States yet, not in this form, but these farmer protests that are happening in Ireland and the Netherlands and Belgium over EU climate regs that are going to reduce production and imperil farmers who produce, you know, food. So how should we understand the impact of what the EU is doing and what, you know, we're not too far behind in doing right now, at least with this current power structure?
We're up to speed now with the omnibus bill that we just passed through. But I'll give you what I see. Look, there are two things you need to control the globe, right? And that's food and fuel. And the WEF, the World Economic Forum, and those people that are in that cabal are trying to take over food and fuel, right? This whole anti-fossil fuel thing, which is 100% a farce. We do things very cleanly with our fossil fuels here. There's a big argument being made. I do it on my show all the time about how the carbon footprint of an electric vehicle is worse than a combustion engine. But now that they've got farmers in their crosshairs because of cattle and grain. And they don't like the grain because it takes fossil fuels and fertilizers to help boost that production. And they don't like cattle because of the methane and what it does to the atmosphere. I'm telling you, they are going for farmers. Farmers are the first line of defense for this country. They are trying to put them out of business. And they've got people like Bill Gates, and they've got people like Jeff Bezos that are trying to develop lab-grown meat so we don't have to kill animals anymore. It's gone on. It's moved on from ESG, environmental, social, and governance, all that garbage. It started off that way. But now the World Economic Forum is going to try to convince you it's not just about the climate. It's immoral to raise an animal to kill it and eat it. And so we're going to, they're trying to put their,
even Beal?
Are out front, and they're very buzzed about it. Huh? What?
Even Beal? I feel like having a Beal chop while you're talking. Go on.
Well, I'm Dutch, like I said. The Beal's a big part of us. But they're going to try to put farmers out of business because of, A, they're going to run it up as a climate thing, but it's really a moral thing to them. These people are nuts, and also with the fossil fuels. Now, in that last omnibus bill, that $1.2 trillion thing that just got passed through, there's $15 million in there that is going to help force farmers to electronically tag, register every cow in the country. Just like it's a gun. So they're going to have a register now of how many animals, who owns them, and where. And that is the beginning of, so they're going to curtail the beef movement because they're going to say it's bad for the climate. They've already done that in Europe. Well, we've got $15 million in this latest bill to help tag all of our animals in this country. It's absolutely happening here already. And anybody that's in agriculture should be scared because the World Economic Forum, these folks have a lot of money. Bezos, Gates, they're already doing it with this lab-grown meat and fake meat. I mean, why do we need fake meat? Why do we need lab-grown meat? I mean, who goes to Gibson's and wants fake meat? I mean, it doesn't make sense. But if it doesn't make sense, that means somebody else is making money off it.
Well, the attitude is that, well, we're going to improve humanity. I mean, we can change people. You know, these people are Mr. Potato Head, so we can change their parts and we can change their appetites and we can change their understandings of the world around them. I mean, everything is about the human being as a blank canvas. And so, I mean, I agree that that's absolutely the philosophy. But the implication, I mean, I think, you know, again, the things that people don't believe until it's too late. The implication that they're really targeting farmers in a way that would imperil food supply, but that's what you're suggesting.
Oh, it's 100% what I'm suggesting. They are doing it right now. I go out on a speaking tour a lot. I just got back from Broken Bow, Nebraska and Holstein, Iowa. And I talked to 250, cattle ranchers at both places. And I told them, I looked them right in the eye and said, they are coming for your business right now. If you don't have voice and a concerted group to defend you, it's going to be very difficult because they're so disparate, right? These people over COVID, they didn't crawl underneath their desk, sucking their thumbs, shaking, waiting for a vaccine. They had to go out and milk the cows. They had to go put the plants in the ground, and they had to go, tend to the cattle. There was no such thing as COVID for ranchers and farmers in America. They're the heart and soul, and it's the last bastion of common sense. These people don't fall for that garbage. Right? And so I tell them they are the number one target for the World Economic Forum and all these people that think they're going to make society better because of exactly what they do with food and fuel. And I can't scream it loud enough, but it's absolutely happening. And when people say it can't happen here, I tell you right now, another thing is the central bank digital currency. That's another form of control. And I'm not a whacked out person. I don't have a tinfoil hat on right now. But people say, oh, you're it's already happened. Look what they did to the truckers in Canada. They took all their bank accounts. I mean, it's already happening, but people are just blissfully walking around. We gave up all of our rights over COVID for this perception of safety. Now people are giving up their rights for convenience. Oh, I don't want cash. It's too much of a pain. Let's just have a central bank digital currency card. I mean, we're giving up everything because it's inconvenient. I mean, I've never seen anything like that's why I feel like it's end of day. Oh, it's not. It's a great country. We'll get through it. That there's going to be an uncomfortable period when we have to get back to normal.
Well, but just to distinguish, I mean, the Bitcoin and the pro crypto crowd is not for those the bank centrally banked backed digital currency, not for a government backed digital currency either. For that very reason, they don't want that sort of tracking and the ability to turn you on and turn you off in terms of your access to your money. Right? I mean, that is so. I mean, there is a distinction there.
And this is, well, I guess there is a very big distinction there. That's, you're right. And that's, you know, they like that because it's out from underneath the purview of a lot of things. But with that central bank digital currency, I'll take it one step further. When they get rid of cash, and that's what they ultimately want to do, and cash is freedom, folks. Don't think anything else. But they're going to say, now when we have an economic problem, like we're not spending enough, they want to spur on the economy instead of lowering interest rates like that, you know, what they would normally do, to try to, you know, spur on economic activity. If you make $5,000 a month and then you get paid on your central bank digital currency card, right, it's going to come with a caveat. Spend this by the end of next month or you lose it.
Right.
Will we have social credits like the China, like the people in China?
We already have them. We already have them. Our banks in America are doing social credit scores already. They're mixing ESG and your credit score already. They just don't publicize it. They're already doing that. And then now, it's already happening. It's people just don't realize that the power and the control. One thing I'd like to say about these, you know, borders. The borders obviously been a big issue, right? And I've read a lot about it. I just don't understand in my heart of hearts why you would want to destroy your own country by bringing down the borders and letting anybody come in, right? And because we all are normal people, we look at the border as keeping people out, right? But when you're talking about the World Economic Forum and the administration that's currently in power now, I heard Hillary Clinton say it, and that's really what piqued my interest. But when a politician or people that think they don't want to run the cabal that wants to run the world, when they look at borders, they look at borders as a barrier to them spreading their power. So they would rather have no borders so they can spread their power rather than you and I look at it like we want a border to keep people out because we want to preserve our society. And so this is their mindset. Let's control the food, we'll control the fuel, we'll get rid of borders, and we'll control the world. There's 8 billion people on the planet. The World Economic Forum had it on their website. It's overpopulated. It should be 500 million. And I guarantee you the World Economic Forum folks think that they should be part of that 500 million.
Michael Lind, a professor down at University of Texas, had a good piece in Tablet on this topic, too, called The War on Citizenship. And this is a great line that speaks to what you just said, Scott. For global elites, countries are merely exotic names for trade zones and labor camps. And citizenship has about as much ethical or emotional significance as a gym membership. That's how they view it. And it's really a good point, because if you don't understand what the opponent is thinking, then you're not going to understand why he or she is doing what they're doing. And that seems to be a recurring problem in terms of believing what's actually happening and what motivates some people to pursue the policies like open borders they pursue. Scott the Cow Guy Shellady, he is the market specialist for Market Day Report, 10:30 to 1. The Cow Guy Close as well. He's the host, 1 to 1:30, both at RFD TV. Scott the Cow Guy, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right, happy Easter, guys. Good to talk to you.
Happy Easter to you, sir.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, John Cass, johncassnews.com.
Good morning.
John, did I miss something with respect to the Francis Scott Key bridge collapse in Baltimore? Did I miss conservatives making this a racial issue somehow, or making this an issue of immigrant labor somehow? Did I miss that?
I don't think conservatives were the ones making the issue of Francis Scott Key's history.
Well, right. Of course, the left was, you know, Francis Scott Key was a slave owner. So let's rename the bridge that was just knocked down, rather than worrying about how to reconstruct it. Of course, but and I saw things like from Axios, the deaths of 4 construction workers in the collapse of Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge highlights the essential role of immigrants in the U.S. labor force and the risks they face. What? So I saw the left politicizing it from the identitarian perspective, the solidarity and marginality rap that they're always running, even in against the backdrop of a tragedy like this.
Idiocy, right.
But I'm a little confused as to this exchange between Baltimore's BLM Brandon, that would be Brandon Scott, and Joy Reid on MSNBC talking about the bridge collapse and DEI died. Did somebody say the bridge collapsed because of diversity, equity, and inclusion? Well, this is what they're attacking. So it's like a straw man to me, but maybe I missed something.
Let's hear it.
Allow you, Mayor Scott, if you choose to do so, to respond to the tomfoolery and attacks on you for having the nerve to be black and also a mayor.
Well, I think, listen, I know, and we all know, and you know very well, that black men and young black men in particular have been the boogeyman for those who are racist and think that only straight, wealthy white men should have a saying anything. We've been the boogeyman from them since the first day they brought us to this country. And what they mean by DEI, in my opinion, is duly elected incumbent. We know what they want to say, but they don't have the courage to say the N-word. And the fact that I don't believe in their untruthful and wrong ideology, and I am very proud of my heritage and who I am and where I come from, scares them, because me being at my position means that their way of thinking, their way of life, of being comfortable and suffering, and while everyone else suffers, is going to be at risk, and they should be afraid, because that's my purpose in life.
This is getting tiresome, Dan. I mean, I don't understand what the hell, what nonsense he's pulling.
We don't want a white men don't want a black mayor of Baltimore. I mean, I don't know Baltimore's history. I think I know Chicago's, but I remember black mayors in Baltimore going back to at least Kurt Schmoke in the 80s, who I remember because he was a strong proponent of drug legalization. And he's a lawyer. He's an interesting thinker, even if you disagree with him. But anyway,
who was on the bridge of that cargo ship? Were there DEI people on the bridge? Was the pilot that came off from the shore to direct the turning of the wheel back and forth, left rudder, right rudder, etc., were they DEI graduates of some DEI institute? What's this nonsense?
I don't know. I guess this is the way to deflect attention from the underlying facts of the situation and the need to present some sort of plan of action subsequent to that catastrophe. I know that there's nobody talking about whether or not Baltimore should have a black mayor. Nobody cares.
You
Brandon
can't
Scott.
Have a newsroom. Do you understand what NBC said the other day? It was the statement from the CEO, the boss of NBC. You can't have a newsroom that is unaligned, that is not aligned and working in concert.
Scott McKay. Yeah. I mean, okay, so they're just saying it out loud. They're saying what is obvious out loud. Yes, you can't have a newsroom that is not committed to groupthink. Right. We got it. Yeah, that's not in service of big government. Right. Understand. Thank you for making it explicit. Scott McKay is the publisher of The Hayride, contributing editor at The American Spectator, and author of Racism, Revenge, and Ruin. That's his new book. Scott, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Dan. I actually have to correct you. They gave me a promotion at The American Spectator. I am now senior editor at The American Spectator, I'll have you know.
My sincerest apologies. Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let me start off by saying this. Yeah. Can I say this? I am not afraid of Brandon Scott. And there's a reason I'm not afraid of Brandon Scott. It's because I choose not to live in Baltimore. So whatever Brandon Scott thinks is threatening to me about himself, he's wrong. I don't care about Brandon Scott and I don't care about Baltimore. Now, the closing of Baltimore's port as a result of this ship hitting that bridge stanchion and knocking it down, that port's going to be closed for a year.
it's going to create some supply chain problems on in a couple of industries, strategic industries, I'll say, which, you know, makes the most interesting thing about that that disaster, you know, its cause. Is this a pure accident, or did somebody execute a pretty brilliant piece of asymmetrical warfare? So there's that. But race has nothing to do with that issue. None. Okay? And the fact that NBC News, which is not a news organ, it's a propaganda shop for the Democrat Party, which is why you can't have even, you know, a rhino establishment type like Ronna McDaniel working there. You know, this is what's going on. Joy Reid brings out the mayor of Baltimore and then asks him questions about race when his port has shut down and his city's economy is going to die over the next year and change before all this stuff gets cleaned up. Like, that's what he needs to be talking about, is how are we going to survive as a city when pretty much the only industry of value left in Baltimore, which is the port, is now dead for the time being. And yeah, he doesn't have an answer for that. So instead we talk about race.
Yeah, you still have the Baltimore Orioles. So you have that going for you. The Ravens. At the risk of going down this rabbit hole, I mean, have you seen any evidence that would lend one to think that this was anything other than an accident, particularly when we do have some evidence of this electrical failure, and we have the Mayday call that shut down the bridge to traffic, so there were fewer cars than otherwise might have been, and so forth?
Yeah, well, you know, Laura Logan had a report, I guess, the day before.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I put into that. You know, we don't know anything at this point, so I'm not making assumptions one way or the other.
Right.
I will say that were it not to be an accident, somebody pulled off a monster piece of asymmetrical warfare, just because that is a very significant economic and industrial setback for the United States to have that bridge drop into that harbor. Now, it could very well be an accident, and I'm not judging one way or the other. I'm keeping my mind open as to what facts and developments do come out on this deal.
Well, what comes out of the port of Baltimore? I mean, in terms of goods, is it mainly farm equipment? What comes out?
I think the farm equipment was one of the things I saw, but there's a bunch of different, you know, there's a lot of chemical plants in that area, and all that stuff runs out of the port of Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, you're going to have some disruptions in some of those industries as well. I wish I had the list in front of me, but somewhere had done that, and it was pretty significant.
Fertilizer.
Yeah, fertilizer was one. Yeah.
Well, of course, it's a significant port. You're going to see a cross section of industries affected, and some logistical reworking that will need to be done. But I mean, that's right. You still have to do a lot more identification of affected parties and interested parties and the mechanics of how you would pull something like that off. And is there any evidence that anything of the sort was possible or was attempted, or there's evidence present of such manipulations? I mean, the Laura Logan thing is
absurd.
And
I don't know one way or the other on any of that.
Right,
so,
of course. So let's talk about the border. Self-inflicted catastrophe that is purposeful. The caravan that's coming. So we got another 2,000 people reportedly making their way to the border in the El Paso area. So here we get. So we're looking at another bum rushing happening. And again, we had this discussion yesterday with Wisconsin Congressman Brian Steil. But do you worry at all, number one, about the substance of what's happening? That's obvious. But that Republicans, when they refuse as a caucus, I'm not just putting this on Speaker Johnson, but as a caucus to say this, if we're going to call this an invasion, then we have to use everything in our power to stop it. And that means we're not going to be signing on to any minibus $1.2 trillion spending bills. Do they have exposure here in terms of backlash against the Republican Party for not doing everything it could, even if you're going to ascribe primary responsibility to Biden?
I think that Johnson in particular is in a trick bag here because he does not have enough votes to stop this stuff. In other words, he didn't have enough votes in his caucus to make a majority or much of one to begin with. I mean, he needs unanimity but on the Republican side, and he doesn't have it because he's got, some exceptionally weak Republicans. So he's got a – I mean, at this point, he's in a strategic retreat. And as a voter, it drives me nuts that, it's like, what's the point of voting Republican? The point is there's some resistance in the House. There's very little in the Senate because Mitch McConnell couldn't care less about the border. He cares about the military-industrial complex, and funding Ukraine is a means of funding the military-industrial complex. And so you don't have any focus from the party at all right now on the border, or at least not to the extent that you need to. The only fix is more Republicans, and yet they can't earn more Republicans by the actions of the ones that are there. So there's the trick bag, and I don't know how you fix that other than, you have to win elections. But the difference between Republican voters and Democrat voters is Republican voters would like the Republican Party to earn electoral success. And I don't think the political class as a whole in Washington is in either party is worthy of that. The difference is Democrat voters are happy to vote Democrat in spite of the fact that they aggressively do not earn the support of their own people.
Well, I'm sure this will come as heresy to many of these Vichy Republicans, but Donald Trump is the best thing going for the Republican Party right now because he brings intensity of support in a way that certainly House and Senate Republicans aren't going to do with this fecklessness, and in a way that Biden can't do either in the transactional party that it is. Scott McKay, publisher of The Hayride, contributing editor of the senior editor at The American Spectator. His new book, Racism, Revenge, and Ruin. Scott, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. See you soon.
And he joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning is John Cass, johncassnews.com. Also, the Chicago Way podcast, you find at johncassnews.com.
Thanks for getting it right, Dan. You're going to be a guest soon, I hope. So
yes.
get the podcast right, and thanks to everyone for listening on this beautiful Good Friday to all of you.
Rui Teixeira, I mentioned him before, he writes at the Liberal Patriot. He's a left-leaning academic type who has some interesting perspectives on the Democrat Socialist Party's, careening off the rails and into the world of New Marxism. Because he comes from a perspective, he was a co-author with John Judis of The Emerging Democrat Majority that was written 20 years ago about demography is going to ensure that Democrats were the majority party of the 21st century. So he's a bright guy. And it's always interesting to hear and to read criticism from sort of coming with inside the ranks that is substantive. Like, things are not going well and somebody who wants you to do well is suggesting this. It gives you perspective on where perhaps opportunities are if you're not inside that camp. He talks about this agenda he's been promoting for Democrats, this three-point plan, if you will, for more than a year, a couple of years, actually. He argues Democrats must move to the center on cultural issues. That's not happening. Democrats must embrace patriotism and liberal nationalism. That's not happening, per the border. And the last, which he tackles most recently, Democrats must promote an abundance agenda. Abundance means just what you think it means, he writes. More stuff, more growth, more opportunity, being able to easily afford life's necessities with a lot left over. In short, nicer, genuinely comfortable lives for all. Well, the polling is pretty clear that that's not where a majority, in some cases a supermajority, of Americans are. The latest New York Times Siena poll, only 26% describe economic conditions as excellent or good, compared to 74% who say they're fair or poor. The majority of Americans have the same dim view of their personal financial situation. It is atrophying. In a Wall Street Journal poll, 57% to 31% believe the economy has gotten worse rather than better over the last 2 years. And he writes that Democrats have essentially two arguments in response to that reality, those attitudes. One is, you know, you ungrateful wretches. Look, we have low unemployment and inflation is coming down and we're doing better and so on and so forth. You don't appreciate how good things are. That's not very persuasive. The other is future abundance is just past November because of the industrial strategy of transforming the economy with all this backdoor Green New Deal spend to stand up renewable energy projects and other sorts of, rent-seeking gambits. Problem with that is, as Tashir writes, that future is well into the future, even if you believe that it's it could be realized by this approach to public policymaking, because Democrats have made things so damn hard to build in this country. So all those projects that you're underwriting are going to take exponentially longer than you're saying to deliver any potential benefits, because you are so tethered to the administrative state that makes everything so difficult to produce in America. So they're in a bit of a trick bag, I'd say. And they thought that their lawfare against President Trump was their path out. But maybe that's not so. It's not seeming to be so at this point. But again, we don't have any verdicts in either. Gerard Baker is editor at large of the Wall Street Journal. He's also the author of American Breakdown: Why We No Longer Trust Our Leaders and Institutions, and How We Can Rebuild Confidence. Gerard Baker, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, thanks for having me.
Before we get to your more recent piece about the Trump trials and the political impacts, what about what Rui Teixeira is saying about where Democrats are at and sort of what they're missing in terms of their approach to persuading enough working middle-income Americans that they are still the party of abundance for them?
I completely agree with what you said about Rui. I don't share Rui Teixeira's broad ideological outlook, but he is absolutely right about what's gone wrong with the Democratic Party. You know, Dan, what I was as you were talking about that, I thought a lot about Joe Lieberman, who very tragically died this week, and the kind of patriotic, moderate, sensible Democrat that he was. And I knew him a little bit. I spent some time with him. He was not only a lovely man and a kind man, but he was the model of the sort of Democrat who, frankly, used to represent the country. And that's what the Democrats have lost. And by the way, of course, he was hounded out of the Democratic Party.
Yes.
Because of his views. And that's right. You know, Teixeira is absolutely right. The Democrats have abandoned the working people of this country in favor of these ideological, this sort of, you're right, you describe it as Marxist, I sort of describe it as kind of neo-Marxist view based on identity, relating to gender and race and all of that stuff. And in the process, they have just, it's really no surprise that someone like Donald Trump comes along and does so well, because he is able to,
improbable though he is, as a himself a billionaire, someone from New York, he, however, despite that, manages to speak for ordinary Americans, for working class Americans, represents their values, understands their ideas and their ideals and their dreams for themselves and for their families and for the country. And the Democrats have simply abandoned that.
You know, so now the lawfare, if they've abandoned this and they've shown no signs of following any advice from Rui Teixeira or anybody else that says that there's a course correction required. So all their eggs must be in the lawfare basket, and the prospect that if some jurisdiction, most notably Alvin Bragg in Manhattan, can convict Trump of something, no matter how frivolous and baseless it is, that they then get to spend some of that $25 million they raised with Lizzo yesterday to pound Trump as we cannot have a convicted felon in the Oval Office, and just rinse and repeat that for 6 months pending appeals, and hope that's enough to move enough in the middle to say, yeah, Biden's terrible, but we can't have a convicted felon in the White House, so I guess we have to stick with this guy.
Well, that's right. That is exactly the strategy. That has been the strategy for the last few years. But as you're kind to mention my column, I wrote in my column this week, it's not working, because I think on the one hand, Republican voters are being energized by this lawfare. They do see, especially, look, we can argue about, and you and I have had conversations before, Dan, you know I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, and I think what he did after the last election was wrong. But the Alvin Bragg case, the Fannie Willis case, this crazy, crazy Letitia James civil suits, the only effect they're having is they're energizing Republican voters and even a lot of moderate voters, because they can see that this is politicized justice and therefore no justice at all. And they're not having the effect on swing voters, at least as far as we can tell so far. We're still 6-7 months away from the election, so who knows? But they're not having the effect on swing voters that they're intended to vote, which is that, swing voters who do have doubts about Donald Trump's character, who don't like him, because swing voters are much more concerned about the issues. They're tired, quite frankly. I think a lot of people in this country are just tired of hearing about January the 6th. They're tired of hearing about Donald Trump's misbehavior, and especially whether it's to do with Stormy Daniels or supposedly inflating assets, that kind of stuff. They care about immigration, Dan and John. They care about immigration. They care about the price level. They care about the state of the world, the fact that the world seems to be falling apart around them. And they're not buying this lawfare. They're not buying this idea that they should be focused entirely on the behavior and the character of one man. They want a president who's going to work for them. And that's why I think this lawfare is not working.
I agree 100%. They see, as you say in the second paragraph of your piece, there's always been a core of Trump voters that are going to support him no matter what, and they see lawfare as an outrage, and they're going to fight it. But there also has to be a significant group of people to support Biden. And yeah. I don't know if the whole lawfare gambit raises the specter that they must change and vote against Trump. I'm talking about the independents and the Democrats. I don't see that happening.
No, I agree. I agree, John. I think that's right. I don't think they are being convinced. Look, again, people do have doubts about Trump, and I have doubts about Trump. I think the man has temperament and character are questionable. But right now, those are being superseded by what a genuine. You know, this country has got real problems. The border is the biggest problem of all. Prices are a problem. Again, the decline of American power and America's ability to project its to defend its interests and to project itself around the world. That just matters more to people than the endless stuff about Trump's behavior, particularly, and this is the point also about the lawfare stuff, particularly when they can see that it's in the case of Fannie Willis, Letitia James, Alvin Bragg, it's Democrat prosecutors, people who were elected as Democrats, in many cases, in both the case of Letitia James and Alvin Bragg here in New York, campaigning on the basis that they were going to go after Trump. That's not, and again, people can see that's not justice.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I still worry that there's a lot of people that have sort of bought into the ends justify the means philosophy that is exhibited, I mean, by both parties to some extent, but particularly with the power structure in its current composition, not just with these prosecutors you name, but with the FBI, with intelligence agencies over the last several years, particularly since the arrival of Trump. I mean, I understand what you're saying, too, about independent voters, working people. They're trying to be pragmatic. They have to look out for their homes, their household finances and focus on the things that are most pressing in their lives. Totally understand that and appreciate that. But then there's this other sort of larger understanding of, ironically, all the norms that are being undermined by this administration, all the guardrails that are being torn down by this administration with respect to state power and the state's relationship between the citizen and restraint, government that's restrained so that people can enjoy their rights equally and simultaneously. And that, to me, maybe it's too abstract, but that to me is really a pressing sort of philosophical question that needs to be answered in November.
Yeah, that is. I agree with you, Dan. Now, I don't know how much attention that's going to get, but I do agree with you. That has been the hallmark of this administration, of Democrats generally, but of this administration, and whether it is on things like, you know, so-called student loan forgiveness, you know, or some of these other measures that the administration has done, where, by the way, were completely unconstitutional and completely, as we've seen repeatedly, you know, or COVID, some of the COVID measures they put in place, or indeed, you know, this attempt to force social media companies, or, you know, to cooperate with social media companies to suppress free speech rights. That is a consistent theme of this administration, which I agree with you should be an important part of people's decision making when they vote in November. I don't think it's going to get the attention it deserves because of this lawfare stuff, and the fact that the media fixate on that, and secondly, because of the other issues that I think that, you know, the bread and butter issues, if you like, that do really affect people. But I do agree that's a very important feature of what we've seen in the last few years, and I think it should be I think it should be a factor.
As to the lawfare part, the people that support Trump and that the people that don't support the Democrats and the heavy presence of the state, are they going to react with anger? Is that what November is all about? Anger on that, anger on the anger against lawfare, anger against the bureaucratic class, anger against being looked down the noses from media. I think that there's a class thing going on in America. I haven't really quite figured it, but I think there's so much changes and I think people are angry about all that.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I think that is what, again, that's one of the reasons, one of the main reasons people voted for Trump originally in 2016. You know, it's the interesting thing for me, Dan and John, is that the Democrats have absolutely, and the media, I should say, the media too. We have to name the culprits here. The media are very much to blame. They haven't learned any lessons at all. I mean, the reason people voted for Trump, one of the main reasons, was exactly what you say, Dan. People are tired of being looked down on, tired of being dismissed. This is, and again, this is back to our original point about Rui Teixeira. You know, the point of his writing is that, you know, regular, decent, ordinary Americans have been told that their views, their values, their ideals are bigoted, are have no place, have no, you know, told by the media that they are completely illegitimate. And along comes Trump and says, actually, no, they're not. You know, traditional American values are actually very good values. They're what made this country great. And the media, instead of understanding that and understanding that it was they and the Democrats and sort of the progressive institutions in this country who made people feel that way, have basically just doubled down on it. They've said, you know, no, you're, you know, the more you vote for Trump, the more bigoted and ignorant and racist and, you know, sexist and everything else you are. And yeah, I think that is a big factor, a big feature of why people will vote for Trump.
Gerard Baker, editor-at-large, Wall Street Journal, author of American Breakdown, Why We No Longer Trust Our Leaders and Institutions and How We Can Rebuild Confidence. American Breakdown is Gerard Baker's book. Gerard Baker, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you both. Thanks for having me. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you. And he joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Yes, it's that time of the week. Open mic Friday, taking your calls 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Take your calls with comments, concerns, criticisms, compliments, general crack pottery. We shall take it all. It's brought to you by turnkey.pro. John, before we go to the phone lines, is there anything you would like
to
offer?
Remiss. I would be remiss if I did not mention it. We did earlier in the show, but for those of you who are just joining in, I'm leaning again towards the microphone so people can hear me.
Good.
Is the column written by Dan Proft. Americans are innocent bystanders. And this column asks the question, I think, is being an innocent bystander, is your culture, is your community, is your way of life, is put to the torch, is that enough to say, oh, I'm just an innocent bystander? I have an excuse. I have a built-in excuse. And I think on this day, for Holy Day, Western Christianity, Good Friday, I think it's a worthy question to ask of all of us.
All right, let's take some calls. There's a bunch of other topics I want to get to too, but let's fold in some listeners here first. Steve, Northwest Indiana.
Hey, neighbor.
Yeah, Dan, I'm in Eastern Porter County. You got to wake up the second squirrel a little earlier because I don't really get your signal until about 7 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
First,
all right, we'll have
first
to.
Squirrel starts out, he needs some help, you know what I mean? He's not.
Yeah, so. Got to get more manpower on those treadmills. Yeah, right, I got it.
Right, exactly.
Squirrel power,
whatever you're using, you know.
Uh-huh.
But John Cass, my favorite fill-in, you need to move one county over because you're not really in Indiana yet. You're still in like an annex of Illinois. They've got the same crooked politicians, judges, prosecutors. You need to move over one.
Got to get out of Lake County, Indiana.
I'm gonna have to consider that because, well, I just can't handle being around those people anymore. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what. Here might be the kicker for you. Local paper here, front page. There was a albino deer that was killed in Crown Point. Apparently, it's a fairly famous deer. There's a Methodist church in Crown Point that's going to have a memorial service for it, and they're gonna bury its ashes in their cemetery.
They're cremating a deer?
Yeah.
What's wrong with these uncivilized people?
Oh, boy.
You don't cook it that long, for one thing. You know, you got...
Oh, boy.
Listen, in Porter County...
That's a pretty good commentary,
season, Wait. In Porter County, before deer season starts, you go to church with your gun, and your gun gets blessed for the season, you know?
In
Lake County, they have memorial services for deer.
That is a pretty good compare and contrast, I gotta say.
Time to leave, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Off and running we are.
Thank you.
Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Happy Easter and all. Hey, I discovered three things that the Democrat Party do, and the third one allows the first two to happen. I mean, they're incompetent, corrupt, and they have no sense of shame or embarrassment. They say things and do things, and it doesn't bother them at all. And three examples, like they'll say the border's secure, or you got Jean-Pierre, I think, one time said that when Biden has a meeting, boy, you better bring your A game and get ready to try to keep up. And she has a hard time keeping up, which makes me think she might want to go see a doctor, like, right away. But the most blatant thing that they do, these people do, is they they say that soccer is a sport, and they say that with a straight face.
Oh, there
face,
you go. You know what?
And they don't laugh.
I'm too old and weak to fight you off anymore. But so I don't go for the fight. I go for the kill now.
Uh-huh.
What are you doing? What's wrong with you?
Pardon me?
What's wrong with
you?
No,
No, nothing. That's why soccer is not a sport. It's an activity, like washing your clothes, tying your shoe.
Go out there. Let's go out there and see if you can run. Okay, like let's go out there clothes. And run 90 minutes so I can watch you puking after three.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Well, that's the whole point. It's just running around.
I'm just sick of you American.
It's just running
American
around. You just said it.
Babies.
Soccer, just run. You said nothing about scoring, nothing about the ball, nothing about the majesty of the game and the passing and the ball handling. You're just running around. Yeah, exactly. That's the point.
I don't think you have the stamina for the English game, Dan.
George in Naperville.
Dan, I know these are precarious times and no one knows what to do with their money, but I have a tip for you. Place it on Blue Note.
Blue Note? What's that?
The Sting.
Oh, nice reference. Boy, that was it. Boy, I didn't pick up on that. I'm ashamed.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
This is about beating up John Cass. Is that what you guys finally get your wax in? Go on.
Well, you know, we're just like, we're not, we just,
as I
care
said,
about,
as I said,
we care about you and we believe it's never too late to rescue a soccer fan.
As I said to the rhino who was assaulting me earlier in the program, I've got two words. Yeah. I know what the last one is.
I got two words for you and the second one is off. Yeah, okay. Great Mad Libs. Matt, Southside.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, John. I know Illinois politicians are talking about legalizing sex work, and we were talking about yesterday about how they're going to want to unionize. Well, I also hope they're going to fight for free health care, because I think free health care may come in handy, no pun intended.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Well, here's the thing. We talked about this a bit yesterday. There's an upcoming symposium of very serious, thoughtful people at the City Club of Chicago, where the elders of Chicago meet to discuss the important issues of the day and offer
a lot of chin stroking going on there. Yeah, a lot of
a lot of deep thinking, a lot of considered opinions, and they're convening to talk about how you set up gimme those hoes bordellos around the city, but do so in a way that preserves individual dignity. Because if there's one thing the Chicago political ruling class is known for, it is the preservation of individual dignity.
Yes. Just think of how they ran the last election. They're still counting. I think it's 50-50. They can't come to a winner in the Cook County State's attorney race.
Yeah, I think that they're supposed to count the last batch of ballots today. I mean, if they get around to it, I mean, maybe they'll kick it to Monday, Tuesday. Well, yeah, whenever they get around to it.
Don't get Eric Zorn upset. They're all going to be upset.
You got plenty of time. You don't have to report official results till April 9th. Just let us go. Let everybody go at their own pace. All this consternation and demanding of results now or election night or a week after the election. Come on now.
The victims of violent crime in Chicago, just relax, sit down. We'll get to you. We'll get to it when we get to it.
Rich, Indian Head Park.
Hey, good morning, John. Good morning, Dan.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
What I wanted to say is I'd like to wish you and your families, along with Amy and her family, Mike Scott, everyone at 560 and all the listeners, a happy Easter, and you guys have a safe holiday.
All right, you too. Happy Easter, Rich. Thanks for the call.
Rich. And Indiana Head Park, for those of you who don't know, is the home of Chicago Fire center back Rafael Chios. Thank you very much. Number 5, if you're scoring that.
Okay.
I can't wait till I get you alone in the
alone.
I'm just gonna.
It's gonna be. There's a tragic steelhead fishing accident up in parts unknown, and we had to bury him in a riverbank.
His feet sticking out.
We couldn't. We tried, but we couldn't bring him back.
Stuck into a snapper hole in the snapper. Yes. Pull them in.
It can happen, you know. Outward bound. Prime Minister Kevin from Ogden Dunes, Indiana.
Another civilized.
I am shocked to find out that your listeners didn't understand what happened with the great cat. You know, it's a miracle. He's in full fettle, and yet he undergoes beatification. He's sainted. Then the church attaches the appellation to that thriving Indiana community. And then, of course, cast moves there. So not a day goes by he doesn't remind all and sundry they're living in St. John. He's not moving. Guys.
Yes. Are you replacing outgoing PM Leo? Are you going to be elevated?
No, this is Leo. I'm outgoing. I was forced to retire by my stupid potato-eating voters that supported me before. So I'm writing a tell-all book. And I've been writing a tell-all book about the great governor, J.B. Lizzo. And if you'd allow me for the moment, I'd like to share with you some of my research about the governor's pet agreed. This great Pritzker family, this American dynasty, you know that J.B., I don't know if you know this, Dan Prof, he hails from one of America's richest, most prominent, and most successful American families since the Kennedys. And they're storied with a lot of firsts, and in JB's case, groundbreaking. And the biggest stories, the biggest guests. Right now, outside the campaign headquarters, I can hear both JB's political supporters chanting, "Hey, hey, JB, please be our Democrat nominee." But these two political supporters are out-yelled by the hundreds of pesky protesters. "Hey, hey, JB, how many meals do you eat for free?" He's the wealthiest elected political politician in America, Governor J.B. Lizzo. And we all know he strives to be history's first Jewish American president. But did you know that if he succeeds, his transgender sister, Colonel James, now Jenny Pritzker, automatically will become history's first Jewish American princess? He was the rarest type of military veteran, both a son of a gun and a daughter of the American Revolution. He was involved in the Merchant Marines and actually was a founder of the League of Women Voters. And I ask you to note that Jenny is the first in the world to be a transgender billionaire. Then you have this then you have a billionaire Penny Pritzker, then you have a brother Dollar Pritzker, then there's another cousin, he's so rich, when he and his wife couldn't have kids, they adopted a highway.
All right, thanks for the call, PM. I think we've gone
That's
through enough
Prime
of
Minister
the
for you.
Pritzker family tree.
Although
Ryan.
He did break his leg standing on it, didn't he?
Yes, right. Could not hold up under the weight. Ryan in New Lenox.
Hey, Dan and John. Thanks for taking my call. John, soccer is terrible. That's first.
Another one!
Second, Dan, I was just curious your thoughts. Obviously, the D.C. press corps is getting real excited about this big fundraiser that Biden had yesterday with the other members of the gang of former Democrat presidents. What is the balance between sort of the groundswell that Trump seems to be enjoying right now and what money can actually buy Biden in this race, given his fundraising advantages over Trump?
Well, thanks for the call, Ryan. I think there are, I mean, there's diminishing marginal returns to money, right? Once people's opinions have hardened about a particular candidate or on a particular issue. So I know there's a lot of discussion about, as Ryan just said, that Democrats have this big fundraising advantage. I don't really think it matters that much for Trump himself. I think it matters for the Republican Party.
The down ballot?
Matters, yeah. Yeah, I think it matters down ballot. And I think it matters for Trump only insofar as you have the systems in place to run proper vote-by-mail programs and to do proper ballot integrity and election day programs, including you know, the legal teams. So I think that's where money matters. But in terms of money mattering for Trump to run commercials on Biden and so on and vice versa, I think that matters a lot less. And so the point of that is to say, you know, both parties will exceed the resources they need to win. And the Republican Party will exceed the resources it needs to have these systems in place that I'm describing. Cynthia in Palos Park.
Oh, John, my Greek brother, Christos Anestis, but not for a few weeks yet, right?
That's right. We celebrate later. We allow the heretics.
Right, I know.
Yes.
You
thank
know,
you. Very generous.
Maybe you remember Chris Pelakoutis, National
oh, sure.
League umpire.
Yeah.
That's my uncle, or was my uncle.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Did he work any Cub games? Because I'm all
for oh, yes. Oh, you know, when he come into Chicago, we thought he was like a rock star. And
of
he would get
he
a nice box seats tickets. And he would say, just sit here and be quiet. Don't ever question the umpire, you know.
Right. There you go. Did he now? Did your uncle also hate soccer?
No. No, my mother was one of 16 children. Everybody loved every sport.
Oh,
but
right.
You know, he my uncle actually stole that home run away from Hank Aaron. Remember that debacle when he Hank Aaron hit that home run and he came around home plate and he called him out because his foot was out of the batter box?
Really?
Oh, nice!
Wow!
Good, trivia. Yeah.
Oh boy! Wow!
There you go. I have a good lead on some nice Amish-grown lamb shanks at a little Amish grocery store out in Mokena on 179th and Wolf Road.
There's right. nothing like lamb shanks, guvetzi, with lamb shanks braised with orzo, tomato, and minzithra cheese on top. Oh, man, come on.
You betcha.
I'm going
can't
to the
wait,
cardiologist
so.
Immediately.
Well, thanks for the call, Cynthia. All right, and the Amish grocery store recommendation.
Right.
That's helpful. All right.
But now she's got to call back, and I got to know exactly where we're going. I mean, how many grocery stores are there in Mokena?
I can't imagine there's a lot of Amish ones. Maybe one. Tom in Blue Island.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, John.
Hey,
Dan, for Amy, even though she's not there today and with the Cubs starting yesterday, saw a Dave Kingman little clip on the internet the other day. He went to Prospect High School. His last high school game, he hit four home runs, Dan, and pitched a two-hit shutout, and which I thought is pretty amazing.
That's when his career topped out, is what you're saying.
Yeah. A lot of pop-outs, right? They were home runs in high school, right? John, I just wanted to ask, was it really necessary to let half the world in the United States in a futile attempt to make soccer popular in this country?
You'll be crying. You'll be crying someday. Right now, I'm going to let you yammer on and chirp all you want on the fence right now. But someday, you're going to cry. You're going to say, why didn't we understand John wanted to help us?
Right.
I'm not
be singing help. That Chris Isaac classic, When Somebody's Crying.
Right.
Yeah.
That's me.
I know.
Mr. Sensitive.
Eduardo, Tampa Bay, here at Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey.
Yeah, Dan, John, happy Easter.
Calling
you from sunny Tampa. We're going to have at MacDill Air Force Base, they're going to have a little around that people can walk to, check out the planes, and check out the Thunderbirds. Hey, I was in Dallas last weekend it was a travel expert, Peter Greenberg, and some other people were there. And it's a great city that people can move to or surrounding area. Texas scored an 8.7 on manufacturing. Check that out.
All right. Thanks for the relocation recommendation there, Eduardo. Mike in Hammond.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Dan and John. Hey, John.
You know that St. John is not too far from Hammond. I know where it is.
I know it is.
So just understand that, okay? So go on. Let's hear it.
Country. Soccer taking off in this country is the beginning of the snowflake, the participation trophies. Oh, my goodness. Nothing more riveting than a 0-0 tie. Oh,
Thanks for the call, Mike.
You can't see the
so true.
You know, pearls
so
before
true.
Swine. I'm sorry. You so guys true. Can't see the beauty in the beautiful game.
If you remove the goals, the game would not materially change. That's all I have to say.
The same people that talk about a pitching duel as wonderful. A 1-0 pitching duel, wonderful, as Dan Prof talked about this morning.
Yeah.
Okay, so one.
At least there was a one.
1-0 soccer game is not good enough for you, huh?
That's a shootout.
Hypocrites. I'm so sick of this. Like dealing with Democrats, I swear to God, liberals.
Ed in the Heights, as they call it.
Hey, Ed.
Hey.
Oh, he's starting too. Okay, go on.
Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, me? I think you. I think UConn's invincible.
Yeah, you're talking about it. Yeah. So the tournament, you kind of. I'll tell you what. I'm in my bracket. Although I'll have to see what the line is in my bracket. I took Illinois to beat UConn. I think Illinois is actually the only team in the field that can beat UConn because they're so efficient offensively. And Shannon will still be the best player on the court when they face UConn. So he's the difference maker. So don't give up on the Illini against UConn. That's what I'd say.
How about Clemson, Alabama? And I don't mean football.
Yeah. Alabama's got too much firepower, and they're playing better defense, as you saw against North Carolina yesterday. I mean, R.J. Davis had a terrible game, and partly that was because they did a pretty good job chasing him. So I like Alabama there. Anything else?
Duke, Houston.
Houston, defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking, I'm not just talking picks. I'm talking spreads. So Houston's given. I don't want to turn this into Irish Danny the handicapper, but Houston's given 4.5. They'll cover that, I think.
Wow! And how about the other bracket? Has Purdue, Marquette? They're not playing, but Purdue plays
Gonzaga.
Gonzaga.
Yeah. NC State NC State's run ends tonight. Marquette will beat NC State and cover. I think Purdue is in trouble. I just don't think Purdue's got a good enough guard play to go much further. And I kind of like Gonzaga in the points tonight.
Wow, Jimmy the Greek's got nothing on you, Dan. You could have gave the totals too, the over unders.
Well, you study, homework. You study, you learn things. Thanks for the call, Ed. I hope that helps, and no need to cut me in on your winnings.
It was rather impressive, my friend.
Well, I should have. I used to say I should have been like had gone into sports talk, but I can't imagine talking about most of this nonsense for. Like 3 or 4 hours, as opposed to important things like we talk about.
I'll hang up
mostly
and listen to your comments.
Yeah, I mean, so no, I don't. Yeah, but it's fun. It's, and I love basketball and I love sports, which obviously excludes soccer because it's not one. It's good to have other interests. I think, right? Even if one is sort of vice laden.
No comment.
My great confession earlier that I'm gambling on college basketball. Legally. Although perhaps in the past I've gambled illegally. Perhaps. Kevin, Austin, Texas.
Hey, Dan. Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. I was happy to hear you this morning when you were talking about how you got the email and, how do you pivot, encourage people to get involved. And I love the fact that you use Vichy Republicans because I was thinking about how do you describe what Dan Proft is doing. I feel like it's when the Germans were occupying northern France. You're in England sending in radio waves to try and encourage the French resistance to take over France. And it's encouraging people, and you're pointing out the facts as far as how miserable things are. But I'm glad that you and I hope you continue to do it to get people involved in the local level. Most people don't know, especially in DuPage County, how the political process is set up. So, continue to do that because, John, despair is a sin. There's always hope. There is hope that things can turn around. Now, the best time to plant a tree is 30 years ago, the second best time today. And I think that's what you've started to do. Start growing the Republican Party to take over the Vichy Republicans
And it starts by people who have families, who have small businesses, to get involved at the precinct level. So, thanks.
There you
thanks
go.
For the call, Kevin. Mary Kay.
Hey, Mary
Western
Kay.
Springs.
Hi, guys. Good morning, gentlemen. John, you know Bill Melendez, who wrote a couple guest columns for you and the John Cass?
Yeah.
He's a buddy of mine. He says to say hi. I just saw
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy. He's the photographer on the website, John Cass News, and he's written. And also, Mary Kay, did we know each other when I was still in the land of Marie Newman?
Only on the train.
Yeah, on the
train. Oh, no. No, you were having your smoky treats, and I probably said something to you like, don't do that.
Okay. All right, Mary Kay.
Whatever. Wait, I need a movie for the weekend, Dan. I watched Tar, and I didn't like it, that one from last year that you thought should have won the Academy Award. We watched Cinderella Man. That was too depressing at the beginning, so we had to shut that off, too.
Oh, come on.
I need a.
You shut that off?
The rest of it? No. I watched the rest of it. My husband can't take those depressing things at the beginning, especially the Irish. He doesn't like the Irish. I already thought
I explained
that.
Yeah, well, you know, who does, really?
Not the Godfather. Yeah, I know, really. It's true. Not the Godfather. All right, so I need something current. It's good. Movie with a happy ending.
It's her point. Did you watch Holdovers?
Leap Year?
Paul Giamatti, Holdovers? The Holdovers?
I loved it. Yeah, I went because you said to go. I do everything you say, so I went to the Holdovers.
What about a romantic comedy involving
rom-com?
Irish girl goes to Ireland falls in love. Oh, yeah. Leap Year. Oh my God.
Which is there such a movie?
Yeah.
Did you ever watch The Dig with Ralph Fiennes and Casey Mulligan?
No. Is that
watch
a good
it.
One?
Yes, watch it.
Okay.
It's one of the best movies of the last decade. The Dig.
Nope.
Thanks for the call, Mary Kay. All right, Joe in Arlington Heights, our poet laureate. Joe, you're on the clock. We got a minute.
Yeah, Tuesday, some friends were in front of Walgreens headquarters and protesting about Prestophone, however you say it. And I thought about the nightmares that are happening every day in bathrooms because of that drug and what the implications are. So I wrote a poem called Unseen Graveyards. Her mournful, lonely cries, searing pain and bitter sighs echo off of tile walls. Screams of regret are useless now. Dare not look where his body lays, just push the handle, the prescription says. But grief now overwhelms her mind. Below she knows what she will find. Viewing his tiny human form intact, hurry, flush the remnants of her act. Horror strikes at her broken heart, all her strength to do that final part. Into darkness, filthy, wet, and cold, a hidden network of sewer pipes old, with rushing sewage his body sent to the city's treatment plant. In separation tanks, the solids drop and the lighter liquids to the top to be skimmed and separated once again. The process is near its end. Air bubbles and chlorine gas send the treated liquid on its path to the stream or river near, then to the ocean to disappear. Captured solids spread across drying beds contain the remnants of our dead.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.